Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by University Hospital, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, before the break, we were talking with Dr. Jennifer Moffitt about shingles and about research. And we actually had a question about shingles that I wanted to make sure we got in before we go on to talking about her research. We were talking about the vaccine, Dr. Moffitt, and I was asking you at the break, is this something that once you get that vaccine, do you need to get the vaccine again? Do you need a booster?
Probably not. I think the adult vaccine is strong enough that one vaccine would be plenty. However, if a person had an immunocompromised situation, a disease that reduced their immunity, they might want to be revaccinated afterwards.
And that's just something they need to talk to their doctor about?
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right. Now, I want to remind people, you're an associate professor of microbiology and immunology at SUNY Upstate, and that means you're involved in this really fascinating research, and I don't usually get research. We had Dr. Steve Jungenthal here a few weeks ago talking about alcoholism and mice, and that was absolutely fascinating. We got some great feedback, so I think this will be an interesting conversation as well.
Well, I expect it will be.
Okay. You also work with mice, but you work with really different kind of mice. So let's start talking about the mice first.
All right.
Tell me about them.
I work with SCID mice.
All right.
And unlike Steve Jungenthal's mice who are exposed to alcohol and you could think of as on Skid Row, my mice are SCID mice because that's an abbreviation, SCID, for severe combined immunodeficient. These mice look healthy, but actually they lack all mouse immune cells. They have no T cells, B cells, and very little macrophage-type cells.
And they are bred that way, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And they're bred at Taconic, which is an upstate New York company in the Hudson Valley. And unlike Steve Jungenthal's mice, ours cost about $60 a piece.
$60 for a mouse.
A single mouse.
And the reason it's so expensive is because they have no immune system whatsoever, right?
They don't. They're very fragile. They are susceptible to all sorts of infections that would never harm a normal mouse. And they have to be kept in absolute isolation in a special laboratory.
So they won't get sick.
That's right. They're very, they're very at risk for all sorts of diseases.
Okay. But you want them to be that way, don't you?
We want them to accept transplants of other tissue so that they won't reject it. Humans who get an organ transplant need strong medication to avoid rejection.
Mm-hmm.
These mice, without any immune system, won't reject transplants or implants of tissues and cells from other organisms.
So the idea here is because they are so completely devoid of anything that would cause them not to get a disease, I'm getting too many negatives in here, you can then use these mice to study human diseases.
Yes, yes we can. We can implant the mice with human cells that then start growing in the mouse. The mouse literally feeds them with their own blood supply, and then we can infect the mice with diseases that only infect humans, such as the shingles virus, varicella zoster virus.
So this is sounding like a whole lot of science fiction to me. Let me make sure I understand it again, okay? You start with these mice. They have no immune system whatsoever.
That's right.
You develop an immune system inside these mice with it's a human immune system?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And why do you do that with mice?
Well, the mice are convenient. We're not really, we can't do some of our experiments on humans.
Of course not.
To test new treatments, but we can on the mice. And if they have all of the correct cells that my virus needs to grow, then I can study virus replication of a human virus in the mouse.
Ha. Huh. That's fascinating. Is there something about mice that makes them amenable to this?
Well, they're small and they don't bite.
Oh, okay. All right. And they have no immune system to begin with. All right. So do you grow the immune system first or do you inject them with a virus first?
Well, we have to implant the tissues, the human tissue first, and establish the human tissues and immune system beforehand. Then we can infect it with a virus.
Oh my gosh. Okay. How do you follow that? I mean, how do you know whether that has grown inside the mouse?
I wish we could just ask the mouse.
Yeah.
But we can't.
Okay.
And because each mouse is so precious, we have worked with a company that has a device that allows us to see literally inside the mouse while it's still alive.
Almost like an X-ray or an MRI?
It's a lot like an MRI, but the tissues that we implant are glowing. So we have engineered the human cells to emit light. We can put the mice into this black box mm-hmm. with a camera mm-hmm. and see the light right through the mouse's skin. And this tells us how the immune system has been established in the mice.
Okay. Again, this sounds like science fiction, but but what you know then is that there is this immune system that's been built up in the mouse, and that helps you study some diseases and how they can be prevented or destroyed in humans?
That's right. We really want to find new treatments for existing diseases and without endangering any humans in the process.
Well, that sounds noble. All right, so you already talked about shingles. That's mm-hmm. one of them. And we talked about both the chickenpox vaccine and the shingles vaccine that you've been working on. What other kinds of diseases are you working on?
Well, human herpes viruses are very restricted. So one of our researchers, Dr. Gerald Foyer, has had tremendous success studying Kaposi's sarcoma-associated herpes virus.
And tell us a little bit about that disease. I've heard of that disease in conjunction with AIDS. It's a skin disease, right?
Yes, it is. People with AIDS, as their immunity declines, are at risk for a disease caused by this virus, Kaposi's sarcoma, which appears on the skin. But what's less known is that this virus can also cause a lymphoma that's present in the abdomen.
And that's a cancer.
Yes, it is. All viral right. Viral cancer.
So the mice have been injected with this immune response,
yes.
this immune system, and then you introduce the disease to them?
Yes. So the mice have an established human immune system. Mm-hmm. Then some of those cells are infected with the virus and reintroduced into the mouse. And over a period of weeks, these mice will get lymphoma, and they get very sick and will ultimately die.
Ah. But your goal is to give them something so they won't die?
That's right.
Okay. And speak to me about that.
So there are very few treatments for this disease. It's usually considered fatal in humans. But Dr. Gerald Foyer has been working with his colleagues to combine two different drugs together to really target this virus and kill the cancer cells that are infected with the virus. These mice have recovered. Oh. And it's looking very successful, very promising.
That's fabulous. What other diseases have you worked with?
Well, we've worked with Epstein-Barr virus mm-hmm. that can cause another viral cancer called Burkitt's lymphoma. That will also is appropriate to study in this mouse model. Another one is the human T-cell lymphotropic virus, or HTLV, that was actually discovered right here by one of our upstate researchers, Bernie Poise.
Excellent.
And he was working with Robert Gallo.
That's wonderful. Now, if I understand it correctly, this is really part of a bigger initiative going on across New York State to have these kinds of studies?
Yes, it is. This is part of the Empire State Stem Cell Board has granted funds to institutions all over the state, including Albert Einstein University, SUNY Stony Brook, and SUNY Buffalo. So we're one of several that mm-hmm. have received grants to study stem cells to treat human disease.
It's excellent. It's an excellent initiative, and it's certainly going to move our science forward in understanding how to treat these things. How on earth did you get involved in all of this? What sparked your interest?
Well, for more than 20 years, I've been interested in understanding how infectious diseases cause disease. And as part of that, my training was done with the at Stanford University, where these mice were developed. So this was done in the late 80s, early 90s, and I was involved with developing these mice to study infectious diseases.
That's interesting. So you were there on the ground floor as these mice with no immune systems were being bred?
That's right.
Very interesting.
We really needed a system to study viruses such as HIV and other viruses that will only infect humans mm-hmm. without going straight to humans.
To humans, right.
We needed an animal model for this.
And once you get past that animal model, once you're pretty confident that it's working in the mouse, mm-hmm. what happens next? How does it actually make it from there to the marketplace where human beings can take advantage of it.
Well, that's a very important effort for Upstate, to have this translation between science at the bench to clinical treatment at the bedside. So what we can learn from the mice is how much of a drug to give, how well it's tolerated, and how it's metabolized in a mammal. And from that, we can go to phase one trials in humans to test safety. Ultimately, we'll test efficacy and hopefully come up with a new treatment.
Excellent. So if I understand that correctly, once you're confident that it's working the way you want it to work in the mouse, then you work into clinical trials with human beings?
That's right.
But the human beings don't ever get it until you're already pretty confident it's going to work.
That's right. FDA approval really rests on solid animal research.
Very
and that's
good.
What we can do.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Jennifer Moffitt, I've been fascinated both by the shingles conversation and by this research conversation. I thank you so much for coming by this morning.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Tricia.
And listeners, we do need to take a break, but we'll be back shortly. Please stay with us. This is University Hospitals HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.